What's up, guys? Welcome back to Table 40. Matt and Leslie here. And today we got some old friends. We are glad to have them. It's February. We're still doing marriage.
Actually, yesterday was Valentine's Day.
Okay, yeah. So yesterday was Valentine's Day. And I don't know. We'll have to ask Brian and Diane if they celebrate. Every day is Valentine's Day around here. So, you know what I mean? When you're just romantic, it just comes every day. So it's like, this isn't a one-time deal. Brian and Diana Roberts. Brian played in the major leagues for 14 years, with a bunch of teams, mostly the Orioles. We've known them for a long time, back since the Nike trip back in the day when Jackson might have been two.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And now he's
hitting bombs at two.
Yeah. So now he's 17. So time flies. But we're grateful for you guys coming on and talking a little marriage, talking a little
just life.
Parenting and life. Yeah. So thanks for coming on, guys. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Good to see you guys.
So do you celebrate Valentine's Day? I mean, how does that shake out at the Roberts house?
Why are you looking at me? We kind of canceled Valentine's Day a long time ago, just because, like you said, it's
love day every day,
you know,
but yeah,
it became one of those days where it's like, you can't go out to dinner or anything because everybody's already out. And then you have kids and you're like trying to get a sitter. So, but yesterday morning, my 7-year-old and I and our newborn decided to get up in the morning, and we went and got some stuff and came home with a big old balloon and some flowers for mama. And I think it was, this is terrible marriage advice, but it was more exciting for my 7-year-old than anything to give some stuff to mommy. So
You're training him.
Teaching them.
That's right. That's right. They love their mama, and they love to love on their mama. So it's good. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. We really don't do a whole lot for Valentine's Day either. I think a lot of it though is just because it's always when we went down to spring training, and it was such a busy time for so many years that we just kind of did the same thing y'all did, that we were like, eh.
It's hard when you have kids, like trying to plan all that stuff. Like, yeah, but you know, every day is Valentine's Day, right? So that's the way I like to look at it.
Yeah.
We can't get enough of each other every day. So
true.
Okay, well, let's go back to how you guys met. We do this a lot on the podcast, and it's kind of fun. And so how did you guys meet each other? We've heard all kinds of stories.
Which story should we tell?
After
them?
You, huh?
After you, Ben.
We got set up on a blind date, actually.
That's the foundation of good marriages.
Yeah. Same here. Go ahead.
Was it really? I don't know.
Yeah.
I ever knew that.
Yeah.
No way. Blind date. Mm-hmm.
My parents, too.
Oh,
sometimes it works.
Yep.
Yeah. So Will was actually in spring training. She was living in Fort Lauderdale, and we were in spring training in Fort Lauderdale, and we went out the first night, and I didn't realize it at the time, but she was a pescatarian, which basically is vegetarian and eats fish. And what did I do? I took her to where'd we go? Capital Grill. Yeah. That's how little I knew about her. And I came home from the date, and me and Jay Gibbons were renting a place together in spring training. I came home, and he's like, "How'd it go?" I'm like, "Awful. There's zero chance I will ever see her again." And about 30 minutes later, she calls me. She's like, "Hey, do you want to meet up again?" I'm like, "Sure." So
yeah, explain a little bit more why, because I was just very,
you can explain that one.
I was very like hesitant and guarded. And when we left the date, my girlfriend was like, "You're already done? Call him back." Like, so I had some encouragement, and then we got a little bit more time together.
She was definitely not the
I was a good dude.
She was not the emotional feely type at that point. No. she was the guy, and I was the check, and I came home crying, and she laughed like, "Eh, whatever."
What did I do, Jay? I must have done something wrong.
I thought it went so well. It's not.
Oh, that's amazing. Then,
yeah, we went out 4 or 5 more times before spring training ended, and we were like, "Well, are we going to try this long distance or what?" You know, and a year and a half later, we were married. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. That's good. How did you propose? We were asked that the other day too, and I think that's a great question. How did you propose, Brian?
So we were actually reading through the Bible in a year together at the time, and I got in the ring, and it's not, honestly, it sounds super spiritual and like really like deep, but it wasn't the best. I'll be honest with you. I could have done a way better. But I put the ring in her Bible where we were studying, where we're reading that night, and she opened it up and there it was, and I proposed and she said yes. So here we are, 11.
Awesome.
Where are we on? 11 years? No, 12 years. We just had 12 years. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I liked it. It was
great.
It was low key and like where the foundation of our marriage was going to start. So I felt like it was perfect, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so good. I love that.
So talking about that,
how'd you do it, big boy? I don't even know.
It was in Hawaii at the Grand Wailea at the little chapel out there. And I was 19 and she was 20.
We were not reading through the Bible in a year.
I was just like, I called her dad and I was like, I was so nervous. I was telling him, I was like, I know he said yes, but I wasn't like a resounding, like super confident yes. And then, so I mean, when looking back, like I was 19 and she was 20, like it just felt like the right thing to do. Like we were about to be on the road. I didn't want to be on the road without her. Like I was like, we need to get married. And then, so we got engaged and then they were like, well, you're going to wait a year. And so we were like, okay. It was a really cool place at a chapel. You've probably seen it, the Grand Wailea.
Yep.
So we went back there. I don't know. It's been a while though. But we went back years later and showed the boys. They were little. They probably don't even remember. But
that's so sweet.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. We officially did not wait a year after we got engaged. I was like, nope, 2 months.
Yeah,
that's as long as I'll give you.
Yeah, I remember that. We were there at the wedding.
I think everybody thought she was pregnant.
Yeah.
They're doing it quick. She must be pregnant.
Well, y'all are older and everything. And so that's really good, I think, to go ahead, engage, get married. Because I think we were talking about this earlier. Since we've moved back to Stillwater, I've had an opportunity to meet college girls. And when there's breakups or whatever, you know, they come over and we talk about their broken hearts. And I think my point in this conference, like where I'm going with this, is that I think like when we get engaged, it should mean that we could get married tomorrow. Like it shouldn't be this thing where like we're engaged, we're testing the waters, and then maybe in a year we'll get married. I mean, ours was different because we were 19 and 20 and my parents were like, okay, wait, like at least go through your senior year of college. But when you're a little older and you have the maturity to, like you said, like you're reading the Bible together and you're doing like you're laying a really strong foundation for your relationship, I think that that's great. Get engaged, get married, let's go, you know? Cause I mean, that's sort of what we were talking about with a lot of the kids that come over that are.
So let's go back to the faith thing a little bit. We talk about obviously Jesus on their podcast. Like let's hear a little bit about you guys' walk with God and kind of, you're talking about reading the Bible together and kind of each of your individual stories with your faith and Jesus.
Well, I grew up in a home that was, we definitely spent a lot of time at church. Just kind of grew up around the faith. My dad was the college baseball coach. And so we grew up in FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And my parents even, you know, hosted a huddle at one point when they were younger and at UNC and that sort of stuff. So my mom, to me, was still the greatest spiritual warrior that I ever have known. And I got to watch her just kind of live out her faith. She certainly didn't shove it down my throat, but I got to watch her, you know, in the living room every morning with her Bible out and leading Bible study fellowship for 30 years and all that sort of stuff. So I grew up with the foundational principles, but the relational aspect did not take over in my life until my freshman year of college. I went to Carolina and played for my dad, and my first semester was an absolute train wreck. And I did everything that I wasn't allowed to do when I was under my parents' roof for about 4 months and realized that wasn't working very well. And over Christmas break, the Lord just got a hold of my heart, actually in Hawaii is the funny part, as you were talking about, but we took a family vacation there. And I read A.C. Green's autobiography, who was an NBA mm-hmm. player for the Los Angeles Lakers, a professing believer. And it was, that was just a huge part of my faith journey. And that was really where the Lord got a hold of my heart and changed me. And it's been a sanctification process ever since. It's never perfect and never easy, but the Lord is gracious and patient and merciful, all in the same.
That's really good, Brian. So what happened when you went back to college and you're with your teammates and you're like, all right, here's the thing. Something happened over Christmas that we're going to need to talk about. So how did that shake out?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question because it was. It's like, you know, 2 Corinthians 5:16 says that you're a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. And that totally was like what I felt like at that point. And what does that look like on a team full of college guys and a bunch of girls that you hung out with and whatever else? And all of a sudden you're just kind of a different person at that point. And to be honest, it really wasn't that big of a transition. I mean, I don't remember anything too crazy, like people, you know, wearing me out about it or anything. It just felt like my life had changed big time. And I wasn't into the same things that I was into before. Fortunately, my college roommate was already a really, really solid believer. And so we just connected even more. And he actually is still one of my best friends. So it's kind of come full circle. But I did have some apprehension and some trepidation, I think, about going back to school that spring and wondering what that was going to be like. But God is so faithful that honestly, most of the friends that I had, they were still friends. You know, it didn't change that much. I just didn't do some of the things that I used to do.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. What about you, Diana?
Similarly to Brian, I grew up in the church. We went every Sunday, every holiday. But it was really just kind of going through the motions and the tradition of it. And then in high school, around my senior year, a group of friends shared this whole new idea of having a relationship with the Lord. And God just like rocked my world in that point and started going to a non-denominational church. And my faith became my own. So then through college, of course, I kind of ebbed and flowed. And then I just realized at the breaking point that I wanted to get baptized and just completely devote my life to Christ. And like Brian, it's completely up and down still, but that sanctification journey and just continuing to try to be more like him and put our flesh aside, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I love that. And so when y'all met, that's something that you decided early in your relationship that you were going to commit to, like Christ being the center of what you had going on. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So when we got set up, initially I was trying to find a night to go out, and I really didn't know that much about her, to be honest with you. And she probably didn't know a ton about me either, but when we talked, I was trying to set up a date, and she was like, well, I'm actually going to church that night. And I was like, huh? Perfect. Okay. No, we won't do it that night. Let's do it another night. And she was going to Calvary Chapel in Fort Lauderdale, where a lot of us as guys that were training in spring training would go. And so we were actually probably in the same church building at some point together without even knowing it. And then when we started dating, yeah, I mean, it was something that I think at that point, it was central to both of our lives. So if it was central to our lives individually, we knew at that point, it had to be central to our marriage or our relationship or whatever you want to say. And then as we got closer and closer to believing that, you know, we were who God had chosen for each other, we started doing a lot of counseling with our pastors and that sort of stuff. And that was huge in our walk with the Lord. And then how do we walk through this journey of marriage, you know, and what is that going to look like, the ups and downs? And what does 1 Corinthians 13 love look like? And how do we live that out, or at least attempt to live that out on a daily basis? In the midst of our serious flaws.
And we wrestled it out. Like, we broke up before we got engaged. We really wrestled with the Lord. Like, okay, is this kind of like what your parents wanted for y'all in that year? Like, we wrestled it out. Like, okay, Lord, like, this is our plan. Do you want us to move forward with it?
It wasn't all peaches and cream.
Yeah, it never is. And that's really, really great you mentioned that, because it never is this smooth story. So you have to have those ups and downs in a relationship to make it, I think, really strong. You know, we've talked about that before.
And so like practical things. So people that are listening to this for marriage and talking about marriage, like, what are some ways practically that your faith and your commitment to each other, I guess, how does that shake out in how you deal with disagreements or conflict? What are some of the things that your faith, you know, you think is kind of the helps you handle, I guess, marriage and the day to day? And you guys have young children and, you know, it's hard, and lack of sleep and all those things that come up. how do you guys use your faith to, or how what principles do you guys apply in dealing with marriage?
Yeah, I mean, we have a newborn right now, so we're in the thick of that sleep deprivation. And the other night, we literally were screaming at each other in the middle of the night because you're just tired and your flesh comes out and you're selfish and, you know, just all the things that innately we are. But with Christ, we look different. So it's like trying to tap into that aspect of his spirit in us. And I'm going through a Bible study with some gals, and we're going through the Beatitudes right now. And it was going through being a peacemaker. And I love that they said, you know, one of the foundations of being peacemaker is when you're the offended, how do you react? And so that was just like spoke to me because it was literally like two nights later after we had yelled in the middle of the night. And I was like, okay, like Lord, like help me. Like I desire to be a peacemaker. Help me when I'm offended or my toes are being stepped on, just to react in love, like the way you would want to react, me to react to my spouse. And it's so much easier to say than play out sometimes, you know, but I feel like if we're continuously asking for the Lord to provide that for us, he will show up. It's yeah. him. It's not us loving one another, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's so good. I love that.
Yeah, and I think that holding each other accountable, I mean, nobody knows us any better than we do, right? So we know when one person or the other is wrestling with something, or maybe we haven't been in the Word the way we should, or spending time in prayer the way that we would like to, and encouraging one another in a way that's not condemning, but just holding each other accountable in our walk with the Lord. And when we're both walking with the Lord in a way that we want to honor him, marriage certainly becomes easier. Let's be honest, because our heart is right. Our mind is right. We are, you know, Philippians 4:8, we're thinking about things that are pure and true and noble and just and loving and kind and those things. And, but also knowing that our walk with the Lord is, it's not always a mountaintop experience, and things in life cause valleys and struggles, and being gracious and merciful with each other in those times. And that's the hardest times, obviously, for all of us, is to have grace and mercy with our spouse when things aren't great all the time. When we are tired, when we are, when we let each other down, which we're going to, we're not going to be perfect, but, I think also like knowing each other's love languages to some extent, or what, you know, and keeping the romance going as much as possible. You have to work at that. You know, the marriage is not easy and it takes work. It's just like, our walk with the Lord also, it says like, that it's going to take work. You have to work out your salvation. It's not just, you can sit there and expect the Lord to change it. You have to do something. It's something that requires effort. And I think that the more we are together and the longer we're together, we realize that it takes more and more effort, not less and less effort sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in those times, in the seasons of marriage that you guys are in right now with three young kids and a baby. I mean, those were some of our worst days.
Yep.
So I'm so excited that you guys could even have this conversation with us with a smile on your face, because I mean, it was really hard when our kids were little. And so
anyway. Yeah, and y'all have gone much longer before us. What do you guys think on your end?
As far as babies or as far as conflict resolution?
Just your conflict resolution.
Well, and what allows your marriage to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm also reading a book about being a peacemaker too. And so and it's super fascinating. I have to read it for one of my classes in school. And it's the same sort of thing, but I think something that the Lord taught me in this is like, Leslie, this is a long-term, like you have to play the long game in this peacemaking process. And like, don't expect your heart to change like this, just because you've read a couple great strategies. Like this is a long-term commitment to peacemaking in a relationship that you want to thrive. And so at the end of the day, if Matt and I want to grow old together, and that's the non-negotiable, like, what can I do every day to work towards that space, you know? And so, and I mean, like just the other day we got into an argument, and I think that it's just the way it goes in marriage. Like the way it goes in marriage is that there's going to be seasons that are just super sweet. And, you know, there's a lot of a lot of sweet communication. And then there's just going to be those patches where you go through and you're just kind of like, man, this is tough, but I want to get there. Like, I want to be an old lady with an old guy and sitting on a beach somewhere, hopefully, and next to you guys. Yeah. So, but I think that it's just such a long game approach to marriage. It can't be this quick thing like peacemaking, and it's just not something that's an overnight, like you read this strategy in a book and then you can apply it the next day. Cause I don't think anyway, I haven't seen that.
Well, I would say that, like, in some of the things that we've dealt with, like, there's going to be seasons where she's has to be super gracious and patient. And there's going to be times where she's going to have to be the stronger one. And then there's going to be seasons where I'm going to have to offer her more grace. And I guess, I don't know, I guess we just, over the last 3-4 years, like, there's times where, you know, you just have to, you know, sometimes they're in a rut or I'm in a rut and she's been gracious with me, and you have to be able to return the favor of offering, you know, through some of the things that you're going through, whoever. And so I think that's been something that we've learned in the last few years.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you're describing empathy, which, you know, it's super hard to have at times, but it's really in a lot of ways what fuels a great marriage is having empathy for your spouse in those times. And my wife walked me through a whole bunch, like you know, when mm-hmm. you're playing or finished playing or that sort of thing, there are injuries or whatever. And then we were supposed to be there for our wives with pregnancies and babies and all that sort of stuff. But I always love what Francis Chan and his wife, their book on marriage, about how essentially, like, if you want to center your life around making your marriage happy, in a lot of ways, that's going to be a recipe for disaster. Like, but if we focus on the Lord's work together and individually, then it becomes less about, oh, how is that person letting me down or making me happy or not making me happy, as opposed to, hey, like, we're in this for kingdom building and work, and we're in this together and we're in it separately. And when you're doing the Lord's work, you don't have enough time to argue and worry about all the selfish things that we want to get him deal with, you know.
And we're not looking to one another to fulfill our happiness. And
never. I would never look to you.
When we're kingdom focused, you know.
Yes.
When we're not kingdom focused, then I'm looking at you like, hey, like, you're my expectations.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah, that's true. We learned that the hard way young, because we didn't do marriage counseling. Like, we, you know, like, some of the things that they can teach you in marriage counseling about that right there is just like, look, Matt isn't strong enough to fulfill every expectation I have. Like, he's not going to be able to do it. That's the role of Jesus and my relationship with the Lord. And we went awry early in our relationship. So I was like, what in the world, you know, this baseball thing, you're gone all the time.
It's funny, like, in a lot of the talks that we've had, about marriage, like, the word expectations and, like, how bad that, like, when we have these expectations and, like, just in life in general, when you have expectations and then whatever it is can't live up to that, like, it sends us into a spiral. And I think that word, if you go into every day, like, with these expectations of whatever, like, I don't know, I just think that it's been weird how many times we've heard expectations when we talk about conflict. And it's just like, I don't know, trying to live life without these unrealistic expectations is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Amen. That's good.
So let's talk about the kids a little bit. So in parenting, like, you know, like, some strategies, like, your boys are getting a little bit older, and do you guys do devotionals with them? And like, how are you guys trying to raise little people of God?
Separate little savages.
Ours are angels. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
We have felt called at this point to homeschool our kids as well. So we have a lot of time with our kids. Maybe too much time with our kids, but
you guys are angels.
No. So we, you know, I think we do try to be very intentional. My wife is great with choosing curriculums and extra things that go along with school that we'll hopefully help shepherd their hearts to the Lord. And so, like, they begin their school with devotional type of stuff. That's kind of how they start. And We do scripture together, and my 7-year-old now, when he began to learn to write, he was everything he wrote was scripture and that sort of thing. So just learning to do things through the lens of the Bible and through scripture, and then trying to surround them certainly with relationships that are healthy and the spiritual building. Certainly we know it's not in our hands, our kids' salvation is not in our hands, but we do have a role to at least provide them with the understanding of who Jesus is and what he's done for us, and try to show them that life doesn't, there's a great analogy of, like, if you have a pie, a lot of times we try to put God into one slice of that pie, right? And then so we always evaluate our life by, like, okay, how big of that slice of that pie am I making God right now? And what are all the rest of them, as opposed to putting Christ in the center of that pie, and then all the other slices just come off of him, right? So, like, he's involved in every aspect of our life, you know? And so if we go, and my boys are into golf, so, you know, if we go play golf, we walk the course and we say, hey, like, if we win today, we praise the Lord. If we lose today, we praise the Lord, you know, like, and that sort of stuff, I think, just trying to keep Christ at the center of absolutely everything that we do.
I love that. Like in Deuteronomy, right? And talk about God in the morning, and then at noon, at night, and just kind of everything that you have going on. We're trying to do the same thing with our kids. Like now that they're older, like Jackson's 17 and Ethan's, he'll be 14 in a couple of days, which is hard to believe. But it's like I'm trying to do this thing where I want to like what they like, but yet I'm going to put Jesus in the middle of what they like. So rap music is a big thing for our 14-year-old. So that one's been a little bit harder, but I've been trying to be like, just tell me the music you really like. Like, what music do you listen to when I go downstairs and I hear it in your room that just let me have it. Like, what is it that you're hearing? And so anyway, and I mean, I've even tried to do that with his music, because I'm like, okay, buddy, you know, this is why this doesn't honor the Lord. And if, you know, so-and-so rapper would have a relationship with Jesus, he wouldn't need to buy all these cars and do all these drugs. I'm trying, like, I just really feel like, you know, I just want to do what you're saying. Like, it's so important that when they leave the house and they leave, like, our home, they know, like, I love that. I've never heard the pie analogy, and I'm going to use it for now on, but that they know that they can put Jesus in the center, and Jesus will reflect in all areas of their world if they allow that to happen, instead of compartmentalizing church. Like, that's how I grew up too, very similar to y'all. It's like, I was awesome on Sundays and Wednesdays, and then the rest of the week got a little bit sideways. And so but I love that analogy for sure. That's so good.
Yeah, my wife spends so much time, I'd love to hear her thoughts on it, because she's so good at, she's so intentional, way more than I am with that aspect of them. What do you love about being able to shepherd their hearts? Or what's one way that you can give wisdom to other women that you've done?
I think the Lord's, like, really impressed my heart in the last month. Like, it's not presenting to them, like, right and wrong, Christian, non-Christian. Like, we have got to set them up in a way that they can, it's called the chew and spit method. I don't know if you've ever gone past that. There's a book called Mama Apologetics, and she talks on this chew and spit method, that basically, like, we can't, like, yes, we're called to protect them in certain ways, but we can't bubble them. And so equipping them to be able to chew and spit, like, take the good with the bad and spit out the bad, because we can't just put them in a bubble and protect them. When we finally release them, they're going to be like, whoa, I don't know what to do with this, you know? So as much as mamas want to just protect, like, we're actually doing a disservice. And so I've had to, like, really process and wrestle with that, like, because my instinct is to want to just protect helicopter mom, you know? And it's like, we can't do that. So navigating that. So
that's good. Project. That's good. I like that. What's that book called?
Mama Apologetics.
I love that. We'll have to.
Mama Bear Apologetics.
Mama Bear Apologetics.
Mama Bear Apologetics. Yes. So it's
really good.
I guess it's obviously, is it based more on teaching you how to do it for your kids?
It's equipping moms to shepherd their children's hearts and point them towards Christ.
Yeah. And I think that's the approach that you know, we agree with too, is that like you expose them to the world, but you teach them how to
filter it.
How to filter it. Yeah. It's like Francis Chan, funny, he taught me that. Matt was playing in San Francisco a couple years ago. And I text Lisa and I said, hey, can we hang out today? I was by myself in San Francisco. So I went and hung out with her, and we picked her kids up from school. And I was like, this is where your kids go to school? Because I was thinking, like, Francis Chan, for crying out loud, he and his wife are going to have like Christian school or something. And I mean, we rolled up to what looked like a prison in San Francisco, like right outside of San Francisco. I mean, thousands of kids are walking to the car. And her son, I was like, Lisa, is this a public school? She said, oh yeah. She said, Francis won't let our kids go to private school right now. They're all in public school. And it's that same sort of thing. She said, he wants to have the opportunity to teach, or they as a couple want to have the opportunity to teach their kids like how to honor the Lord in the midst of what they got going on in their schooling. And so to me, it gave me so much freedom, because our kids were in a Christian school in Florida, and then we moved to Oklahoma, and there were no options for the older boys to go to Christian school. And so that God really prepared my heart in that. I was like, if Francis and Lisa can send their kids to San Francisco public schools, my kids can go to Stillwater, Oklahoma public schools, and they're going to be okay. And so, but it is so true and so wise to acknowledge a reality that they're dealing with and speak into that reality versus, like you said, helicopter parenting or bubbling them up, because eventually they're going to see what's out there. So that's good.
Yeah.
I love that.
What about y'all? Any other things you'd like the Lord's pressing on your heart as your kids get older?
it's a journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's enjoying like all the stages, right? I think just like now that Jackson's 17, it's hard to believe. And then, you know, it just goes so fast that like, you're like, wow, I wish, you know, I guess you can always say, I wish that would have enjoyed the younger ages more, but it's like, you know, it happens quick. So it'll, but
long days, yeah. They say. Okay. So here's my next question. You guys have an adopted child, right? And so,
and we then, do, yeah.
Yeah.
Our little guy walked in for a second.
Great.
You're fine. It's fine. Seriously, dog busted through not that long ago.
We get it. We get part it. Of the realness of this podcast is that dogs and kids are welcome and it could happen at any time.
Yeah.
Well, our kids were in their crate, but they got out. I don't know.
And their bubble wrap.
That's amazing.
They popped out of the bubble wrap. Dang it.
They popped out of the bubble.
Oh, I love it. And so y'all felt led to adopt right at our friends, the Wainwrights. Yeah. They also have an adopted little boy named Caleb. And so talk about that process a little bit. I think that's so cool.
So when I retired at the end of 2014, we were kind of processing what the Lord was going to have in store for us post baseball and all this sort of stuff. And we had always loved being involved with kids ministries and all sorts of stuff, but we just didn't know what it looked like. And very long story that I won't tell, but the Lord literally placed a young 18 month old girl in our backyard, essentially in a diaper by herself. And we ended up fostering her for 9 months. And at the time we had our first child who was 18 months. So we went from one 18 month old to 20 18 month old in about a matter of 2 hours, in which we didn't know this girl from Adam. So all of a sudden the Lord was like, here you go, you guys are gonna get into foster and adoptive care. And we're like, okay.
He knew that we were so scared to do it, he had to put the baby in the
back. Yeah, literally. Yeah. Walked her on your yard.
So you're not gonna go sign up. Well, here you go.
Yeah.
And and so following that, we fostered three or four or five other, we've had maybe five or six fosters since then. And then the last one that we had, when he left our care, my wife was just kind of heartbroken. And she's like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I want to adopt. And so we prayed about it for a while and prayed about it. And
the Lord put a baby in our front yard.
What? No, this one did not come in our front yard, thank goodness. But so right as COVID actually started happening, we had we were given a case, and there were several. The Lord really speaks to my wife in threes a lot of times, and I can't explain it, and I try to argue it, and I try to fight it, and it never seems to work. But when she hears for the third time, I might as well just get on board. So we got on board, and there was a little guy being born down towards Port St. Lucie, and the mom has two other kids that she does not have custody of. She had previously had an abortion and almost physically died from it, and swore to the Lord at that point that she would never have another one. And she got pregnant again, and so we got this case, and man, it's we adopted Crew Emmanuel Roberts on September 10th. He was born 2020, and the greatest blessing of our lives for sure. James 1:27 says that religion that is pure and blameless and faultless is to take care of widows and orphans in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And so every time we had a foster that we literally were going to lose our mind and pull our hair out and be like, I can't do this anymore, it was like the Lord would yell that at us, like, hello, you have a child, you have an orphan in distress, and what are you going to do? You're going to give him away? And so it's just the Lord just continued to lay that on our heart. And so, yeah, we now have a 5-month-old little boy, and I don't know what the Lord has in store for later. Everybody continues to ask us, are you going to adopt again? And I don't know. We'll see.
Day yeah, by day. One foot in front of the other.
Yep,
that's awesome.
And here he is waking up. So sorry if you hear.
That's him. Awesome. No, that's great.
He'll be here. Hey, hi. This is Crew.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing! I love so it. Awesome. It's so awesome. Well, we'll let you guys go. I mean, you've got babies, and he's awake, and he's so cute, but no one will see it because I told you guys we don't release video. Yeah. And so
yeah, thank goodness nobody's seeing any of our circuits right now. Yeah.
Okay, so beautiful. One question before we go. So at the end of every episode, if you're sitting, if you got one meal and you get to invite 6 or 7 people, not family, who you got?
And what are you
eating? What are you eating? Yeah, what are you eating?
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you still just eat fish?
What?
Pescatarian? Is she still a pescatarian? Are you still a pescatarian?
Oh, yeah, praise the Lord. No.
Oh.
That was a phase. I went through lots of those phases as well.
Yeah.
I don't have time to have those phases anymore.
Just whatever you got. I'll take whatever.
We're like leftover cold pizza in the morning. Yeah.
Perfect.
Sounds perfect.
Oh, I love that.
6 or 7 friends that we would invite. Man, what are you smiling about? Let's see. Well, how about this? You get 3 and I get 3. I don't know. It works. That is hard. We just have so many friends,
So
many people love us, Matt.
Yeah. I know. It's so rough.
I would say our friends with the 5 boys for sure.
Well, that makes 7 right there. So that's trouble.
There you go. Oh, we can't invite one of them.
Yeah. Let's talk about what we'd eat.
One of the kids have to stay home.
What would you eat? I would go with, my mom passed away 5 or 6 years ago almost now. And she made a dish called Swiss steak that was always my favorite growing up. And I don't even know how to describe it, but you know how you just have your mom's favorite dishes. And I have my wife's favorite dishes too, but because my mom's anniversary was just 2 days ago, it's still kind of sentimental to me. So I'll go with that one right now. It's a
good one. Do you try to make it? The Swiss steak?
I don't know that I do it justice, but I try. it's the thought that counts.
She does sweetly, right. Very sweetly try.
Yeah, nice.
What about y'all? What's your favorite meal?
I don't know. I really like bison filet in any Mexican Ooh. Food. But bison filet, like you brought up Capital Grill earlier, and I was like, that sounds amazing. And so they usually, sometimes their specials, bison filet.
How good. About this? Wow, Joe's Stone Crab.
Joe's Stone Crab.
The king crab at Joe's Stone Crab in Chicago is.
That's a good one.
Not probably good one. It was.
We Lord copped out. Great. We really wimped out on the people. Yeah, I don't know. It's too hard.
Yeah. We have 2 small groups, so I think that's why it's hard.
There you go.
Because it's like. Yeah. Just different relationships.
You can put them both in. We'll let y'all put them both in.
Yeah, good small groups. Good small groups. Oh, I love it. That's awesome. All right, you guys.
Thanks for coming on. I know you guys are super.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Good to see you guys.
Thank you for listening to Table 40 with Matt and Leslie Holiday, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports intersecting with faith, visit sportsspectrum.com.